Welcome to Head Over Feels, the podcast where we discuss matters of the heart while also using our heads, blending emotional awareness with intellectual relationship skills.
We promise raw, real, and sometimes ridiculous advice on love, sex, and relationships.
I'm Megan Sundra.
And I'm Fernando DV. We're here to tag team you with juicy insights, tantalizing tools, and sometimes embarrassing anecdotes in order to help you have the best love life ever.
This week, we'll be answering letters about an unshared kink, sexual shutdown, a psychoanalyzing boyfriend, stuck in the short term, and how to break up.
Sexual shutdown.
I know.
That sounds like a bad porno name title or something.
Oh, that's depressing. People click on the video and they're like disappointed. They're like, God damn, what? There's no sex in this. Right. Trolled.
I think you were the one who sent me. There's like videos of, PC porn or do they call
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah, that guy. It was like wholesome porn or whatever. Yeah. Oh, you all listeners should check this out. He's this redheaded guy. We should have looked this up. I think he used to work for like College Humor or something. Or cracked, maybe. Yeah. Anyways, so there's all these things on Pornhub where, and he's like one of the official sponsored producers on Pornhub. Like they've acknowledged him with a jacket, I believe, like a branded jacket. But he does like Ebony co-ed holds my hand as I ask her about her day. And it's really just that. It's really sweet. There's nothing sexual about any of it, but the titles are written to be porno titles.
So salacious.
They're so funny.
And the there's one about the pool guy and he just like cleans out the pool. And it's like, and you see him clean the pool, it waves.
That's literally it, yeah.
And then like a boss respectfully declines sexual advance from their coworkers. Like, wow.
The content we all truly needed.
Right.
Shall I get to the first one?
Yeah, we just needed to share that.
Yeah, enjoy, you guys. Something a little different to look up while you're bored.
Yeah, watch it with your couple when you're really in the mood.
Right, like, hey babe, want to watch porn with me? And you like pull up porn.
Porn.
Yeah, it's just like really nice. All right, letter number one is from Laura, a woman in her early 30s. She says, just listen to your episode about how to reveal your kink to your partner. You mentioned there'd be another coming up about what to do if your partner isn't interested in participating in that kink. I'm wondering if you can talk about that other side of that. I moved in with my boyfriend a couple months ago. Before we moved in, he shared with me a fetish and seemed super uncomfortable talking about it. He wanted me to know because he was worried I'd find any related items in our new place. I hope I was supportive, understanding, and kind. After we moved in, while unpacking, I found a sex toy we'd never used, wasn't looking for it, just came upon it in a shared drawer. I told him later I'd found it. He got super anxious and upset, I think because it's something he wasn't ready to tell me about. In general, he seems ashamed of them. Besides telling me about his kinks, he doesn't really seem to have an interest in me partaking in them at this time, which, of course, is okay if that's what he wants. I just worry that, like what you said in the episode mentioned above, he doesn't feel like he can be his genuine sexual self with me, or that at some point there will be resentment. This is my anxious brain just laying it all out there, but I'd love some advice. Appreciate your time.
Oh, thanks, Laura.
Thanks, Laura. What a throwback to our other episode.
Did we make another episode about the other side? I feel like we did.
We did, and I looked it up to help Laura out here.
Thank you, because I was like, oh my God, did we do it? Have we led our listeners astray?
This is where my like 12 years of academic education and practice with spreadsheets come into hand. This is what I paid tens of thousands of dollars for. Right. Episode 11, Laura, is the one to look into where we talk about what to do if a partner isn't into your kink. But she's kind of asking something related to that, you know?
Yeah. I feel you as a fellow anxious brained person. So we do appreciate all the detail and thought and just mindfulness, because there are all these things to consider and are worth considering too. I want to ask, because it wasn't explicitly said, that you said that you didn't think your partner wanted to partake in with that you in the time. And did he explicitly say that, or is that anxious brain saying that? I ask that because sometimes it's easy for us to fill in the blank, and I do that sometimes, you know, just we kind of put two and two together. It's like, okay, that makes sense. So I might make a assumption here about this, and that may not be the case. it does sound like he is struggling with vulnerability around it. And understandably, some guys, you know, especially or people in general who are new to a certain kink. Mm-hmm. And there's also just the whole societal perspective of kinks where you're just freaks, weirdos. It becomes so much more loaded than it needs to when it's like it's as much a preference as what kind of ice cream you like, mm-hmm. as much as you like, I don't know, being pegged or having your feet licked or whatever the case is. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It's just a preference is all it is.
We need to destigmatize kinks.
Yeah. So it's okay for him to be where he's at. It almost sounds like he could use some support. And maybe there's a conversation of asking like what he needs to feel comfortable around his kink. Because it sounds like with that shame, it's kind of like, I have to keep it to myself. Mm. I don't really want to talk about it. And so maybe you coming forward and say, hey, I'd like to support you in this. What do you need around this? You know, how can I support you in exploring that more? How can we explore it together? Is that something you want to do? And just let him know that it's okay for you to have whatever kink you have. Mm. There's nothing wrong with you. You're just you.
Yeah.
And you're just exploring this new thing. And maybe we can do it together. So that way it can just be like another connective possible point for us.
I like that. Making it a collaborative process and reassuring him. I think if he's feeling shame, he's probably feeling a lot of vulnerability. And giving your partner support and reassurance when they're feeling that shame and vulnerability can go a long way. Saying things like, you know, I support whatever you're into. I accept you for who you are. And it sounds like you've been very patient and open-minded and accepting. And letting him know where you're coming from, your fears, your concerns, things like that. And letting him know that you're happy to participate if or when he's ready, but it doesn't have to happen at all. You know, giving him no pressure, no rush can help a lot. And maybe encouraging his self-acceptance in himself. So learning and investigating the psychology of your own kinks is huge. It definitely changed my life.
Yeah. Tell us more.
Yeah. It's kind of all under that umbrella of why do I like what I like? Mm-hmm. And in some ways you can find origins like, there was this one moment where I realized I liked that in my past. But at the risk of becoming too Freudian, you know, watch how you analyze the reason you have kinks. But it doesn't have to make a lot of sense externally. It just has to make sense to you. Like, I just really like the implied power dynamic in this one very specific scene, you know, or this object. The texture of it just like is so unique and strange that I'm into it. You know, there's all kinds of reasons that you can be into what you're into. So if he could become more self-accepting and eliminate some of his own shame, then he could at least be comfortable when you inevitably run into the sex toys again or the topic comes up, or then maybe someday he'll be comfortable to ask for your participation.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. I'm curious if that's something he's willing to share or what he's waiting for.
Sure.
Because it is, you know, if you're going to be living together and you're in such close quarters, like, you might as well get it out of the bag, you know, and maybe just like ask questions to understand it. And maybe he feels a certain way about it, but maybe having you kind of, I don't want to say tease him out, but just ask him like, well, how does it make you feel? Why do you like it? You know, what brought you to it? And just let it be a place of a genuine curiosity. Mm-hmm. I think when we are asked things, especially about ourselves, whatever, we open up a bit more. And so knowing that you are showing an interest is an authentic interest because he's your partner, you care about him, but also you just want to know because I haven't explored this, so I'm curious your experience, you know?
That conversation sounds hot as fuck. Yeah. Can we be a fly on the wall for that one? Whoa.
Just low-key put a recorder, audio recorder on.
Yeah. I want to know what it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to reassure both you and your partner that it's okay to have a kink that you want to just keep for yourself, keep it in fantasy land or a toy that reenacts the fantasy for you, whatever it may be. Because sometimes it can be your own private little pleasure. It's something personal you don't feel like fully excavating and dissecting for someone else.
Yeah.
It can be your own joyful little personal me time experiences.
Yeah.
Like I have a whole Rolodex of kinks that nobody needs to know about or participate in. They're really they're good on their own in my head.
Yeah.
So they're not, sometimes they're inherently non-participatory, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you for writing, Laura. We hope that you come to a place of clarity and a lack of shame and openness with your partner. It sounds like you're really on the right track. You have a great attitude about it.
Yeah, conversation's key, and openness and curiosity. Mm-hmm.
Guess what, listeners? There's now a special space for all of us to hang out and converse online. Our brand new Facebook group is called Rebel Hearts, Head Over Feels Podcast Community. It's a private place to discuss the show, share love and sex memes, participate in topic discussions, hear about podcast updates and special opportunities, and enjoy additional content from your hosts. Come join in the fun and let your freak flag fly. Again, this group is called Rebel Hearts, Head Over Feels Podcast Community. See you on the inside.
All right, the next question comes from Chaz, 29-year-old male. And his question is, my girlfriend and I have been together for 3 years now and lived together for the past 6 months. Our relationship has had some struggles, but we've managed to get through it just fine. A few months ago, things started to steadily decline and our sex life went from pretty active to almost nothing. I've tried talking to her about this, but she just says she's not in the mood. It seems like everything else is great, but I'm not sure what I'm missing. Is there anything we do to help this? Is there anything we can do to help this? Or is this something that happens in long-term relationships?
I mean, it happens. It's a common thing. Like, there's a lot of sexual excitement and novelty at the beginning of a relationship, but it's not an inevitability that people have no control over. There's definitely things you can do. And this is something we dive into with our private coaching clients and things that we work on with people about keeping that spark alive, because that's just such a big topic that people always want to know more about. And we're going to dive more into that in a future episode in detail. But yeah, you're not doomed. You're not confined. Well, I mean, we're all doomed, but...
Yeah, we all die alone, so...
Yeah. In an abstract way. But your relationship is not doomed. Your sex life is not doomed. Yeah. You say you've talked about it with your partner, but one of my initial questions was, how extensively have you talked about it? At what depth? And with what vibe? Mm-hmm. You know, like, have you been blamey or demanding or putting pressure or judgment on your partner about this? I'm just curious.
Those are good questions to ask. Mm. Yeah, and I think with any relationship... things can work as long as both people are putting effort into it.
Yes.
And also, we don't know what was going on for her personally. To add on to what Meg was suggesting is, like, I think asking the question, but asking from a place of, it could be birth control meds as well. If I'm not mistaken, birth control can also lower your libido, kind of like counterintuitive.
it's pretty bad.
Well, you're definitely not having sex and you're definitely less likely to get pregnant.
Right?
Being okay with, and it's not rejection of you.
Mm-hmm. So like any answer she gives, like, be prepared to receive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And don't let it be a place for you to throw a tantrum or like get pouty, like, oh, you want to have sex with me? Like, that's right. Not hot. That's like,
no, it's not.
Everything about that is like immature and not, they're going to probably want less sex with you when you're like going around pouting because you didn't have sex with them. It's okay for them to say no. And if you're willing to ask, you have to be prepared to not get the answer you want. Mm. So throwing that out there. You can also ask stuff like, is there anything I can do to get you in the mood? So that's a valid too. Like, maybe they need a little help. Maybe they want you to kind of drive it for a bit. Mm-hmm. I've had experiences where my partner is like, you know, I'm not really feeling like, I kind of want you to drive and I don't want to have to tell you what to do. Mm. And then it's like, okay. So then they kind of give me like, this is what I want right now. And I really want to do this, but I just don't want to put the energy in.
It's for like, sure. Okay.
And so that gives you something to work with. Or it just might be, it could be just, it's a no. The other thing, it could be just like, okay, like, can I get a rain check then? Mm. You know, so like you can maybe set a sexy date for another time.
Yeah. Because that way you can assess her overall level of interest in having sex with you. Because the I'm not in the mood is a very like in the moment answer. But if there's some longer term or ongoing, like I'm not very attracted to you anymore, or I'm weighed down by some other shit in my life, or I have these other relationship concerns that are putting a block on my access to my own attraction to you, then digging into those will get more at the root of it instead of just, because if you were to say, oh, let's take a rain check on it. And she's like, yeah,
about, you know,
then like, it seems like she doesn't want to have sex with you now and probably not later either. That's a bigger problem, right? So like getting curious about her experience and her feelings and her needs, like where are you coming from? How are you feeling when we talk about sexual topics? Do you ever feel horny? Like, does she masturbate on her own and she just doesn't want to have sex with you in particular? Or is she shut down for other reasons? And just letting her know that you support wherever she's at and she can take her time, and stress the importance that feeling connective and being intimate with her is for you and the relationship as a whole. Letting her know that, you know, I want to have sex with you, not just for a physical enjoyment, but to feel connected with you. This desire, I want to understand you better and I want to feel intimacy. It doesn't have to be sex. Like maybe she feels pressured to get like jackhammered by you. Like if that's her experience, I don't know if she's going to want to do it all that much. So like find out what she likes and doesn't like about what's been going on. And maybe she just wants like a nice slow build from getting eaten out, you know, and like she would be more willing to have that kind of sex because it's more what she's been in the mood for lately. So find out if you've been looking at sex in like a very myopic, narrow way or a, you know, binary way. It's either this or nothing, you know, or not counting certain sexual things as technically sex. Like expand your definition. See what else she might be down for. Yes. The menu is large.
Yeah. Bring in some toys.
Yeah.
Get curious.
Right.
Gosh, when you say describe sex as a jackhammer experience, that sounds miserable. That's I can't get over that. So one thing I also want to remind you is that no one is entitled to sex inside or outside of a relationship.
Yes.
So as much as you may or want it, or they may or may not want it, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You, both people need to agree on it for it to be an ethical and consensual experience. Mm-hmm. And so by you showing maturity and saying, hey, it's okay, like Megan was alluding to earlier, of like that you respect their decision, you're showing that you understand their choice and you respect their choice. That might also motivate, you know, other things to come up too. Like if you... Because if you're respected, if someone can give you a no and you respect that and it's not like a loaded, like, yeah, yeah, totally fine, but really it's not. Don't do that, by the way.
Right.
Then that shows that this isn't about you getting what you want. It's about you respecting the other person. And you're like, you're both opting in this experience together. Mm-hmm. Sex isn't just for you to get off and she doesn't. I think if that's how that's going, yeah, I understand she's kind of like, I don't really want the jackhammer experience tonight. But...
Or a transactional experience.
Yeah. It's like,
know?
I want it to be a connected, loving experience. Or
like a dirty, kinky, but that's still connective in its own way experience,
yeah.
Right?
Or yeah, it's like, or I just want to be fucked raw, but I want it to be both of us really in it, you know? Mm-hmm. And maybe she's tired. Whatever the case is, relationships don't have to look like they just die out and get stale.
Right.
But you also need to make sure that you're digging into the conversation, not just like, okay, you said you don't want to, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But maybe, yeah, like I said, Meg pointed out that the emotion, where she's at, reading the room, make sure you're also picking up the subtle cues. Because if you're just, if, you know, she's like rolling her eyes or kind of like, yeah, rain check, whatevs, you know, then that might be a good indicator of like, hey, there's, that answer seemed a little bit loaded. So is there anything else you want to say?
Mm-hmm. So right. And I think asking questions like my favorite Fernandism, is how can I best support you? Mm-hmm. Right.
Thank you. I wish you could take credit. I forgot where I learned that.
But you can own that one. If we had like one of those dolls where you pull the string in their back and it says certain phrases, the Fernando doll would have that on the list of phrases. How can I best support you? Yeah. future merch, guys. Check out our store in like a couple years. Custom dolls.
Fucking dump their ass. It might be another right, one.
Totally. asking questions also like, how else can we feel connected and intimate or sensual together?
Are we feeling connected and intimate? Well, there's another one too.
Because indeed, foreplay starts long before anyone touches each other, right?
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if all else fails, right, it sounds like you've tried to have some conversations with her. Maybe they haven't been as deep or investigative as they needed to be. And if you try all this stuff that we just told you to do and she still is like, I just don't want to talk about it. I'm just not in the mood. And like refuses to participate in the conversation. Mm. Then what should he do?
Oh.
Because that could be coming here. She may not be super down to talk about this. You know, if it becomes a refusal on her part and you make it clear, like, babe, I really need to talk about this with you. It is so important that you participate here, and you continue to refuse to discuss or change anything, then I need to state my standards and desires for what I want in a romantic relationship and understand that if I'm not getting them here, I may eventually find this relationship unfulfilling and may need to find the right relationship for me.
Yeah.
And for her too. You know, maybe she needs, maybe she's slowly realized she's asexual and like needs to have a partner who also is asexual. Who knows? So I don't think an ultimatum should be your first decision here, but it is kind of a last resort that needs to be on your menu of options eventually, because you're not stuck in this relationship. If she won't talk about it, you're not like held hostage forever. You can be like, all right, this just isn't for me. I've tried everything.
And you're not a bad person. Like, we all have needs and wants. Like, some people may be like, this relationship isn't kinky enough. This relationship is too kinky. I need more sex. My needs are like, I have a high sex drive and that's something really important to me. I have a very low sex drive and I need you to like meet me there or
you know? So whatever it is.
Yeah, it's like, it's valid, but you have to make sure you're looking at it from yourself first and foremost. Not like, well, you don't give me what I want, so I'm out.
Right.
It's not about the other person. This is about what your needs are. And that is a hard conversation to have, to realize and recognize when you're like, what my needs are and what I'm getting are in conflict. And if that other person isn't willing to meet you there, that is okay. You will make that choice to leave the relationship or find that elsewhere, depending, you know, if you're monogamous, probably gonna be leaving the relationship unless you have some sort of ethical agreement, consensual agreement between the two of you. If you're poly, and then negotiating what that can look like. So you, if you do want to still be in the relationship, but it may look like you get some of those needs, explore that with other people, others. But just making sure that it's all communicated. And just remember, and if you need to take time, go journal. Take some time to really think about that, because if that's something that's really important to you and you're not getting it, don't just be one of these. I'm just really tired of meeting people who are in their 40s, 50s plus who are married and miserable. Just like dealing with the relationship. That is like the ultimate, I think the ultimate form of just like throwing your life away and your love life away. Like, I just want to see people who are happy and by choice, not out of obligation.
Absolutely.
Please don't be one of those people. It is depressing for me.
Yeah, same. We want to save you all from that kind of future.
And that's not how relationships should work. Like, you can, they can be awesome. You can still have a good sex life years into your relationship, but you both have to communicate and be invested in it. And if it doesn't work, you can have a healthy parting ways, which we'll talk about at the end of the show.
Hell yeah. Stick around for that. Well, thank you for writing, Chaz. Yes, we appreciate your question, and you are not alone in that experience.
If you love our wisdom and insights from the podcast, imagine how valuable it would be to get private one-on-one coaching with us. We'd love to give you a personalized perspective and support around any kind of relationship struggle that you're experiencing. To get more info and apply, go to headoverfeelspod.com/coaching.
All right, letter number 3 is from Janine, a 36-year-old woman. My boyfriend has been psychoanalyzing me more and more, and I'm losing my mind. He'll assume he knows why I'm feeling a certain way or doing a certain thing, and he tends to treat it like a gotcha situation. Telling him that he's wrong is impossible. One example is that I was sharing with him about a movie I watched with a friend recently, and he paused and asked, "Do you like movies like that about kids? Is this a sign of regression or some other need not getting met?" It's infuriating. He's acting like a goddamn therapist, and he is not one. He usually continues the tone even when he says, "Okay, I'm sorry, I'm just asking," or whatever else he says. We've been dating over a year, and things are pretty good aside from this, but it's really wearing me thin. How do you deal with this kind of shit? Oh, man, I hear your frustration, Janine.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, tell us more, Meg, because that one...
Well, I feel like I'm guilty of being the psychoanalyst sometimes. I mean, it's part of what I do as a relationship coach. You do blend therapy and psychology concepts into, you know, talking to people about why what's happening for them, why they're feeling the way they feel. And I psychoanalyze myself every single damn day. And there is a trap you can fall into when this is a big part of your life. Like, let's say your boyfriend, Janine, is really interested in psychology and he's nerding out about it a lot. Then he's sort of inundated with this material and language all the time and may, you know, feel excited that he's pointing out something that's you're experiencing. But it sounds like in your question, it doesn't sound like he's just over enthused about this topic. He's like maybe projecting and using it as a sort of superiority tool.
Yeah.
I don't like how it sounds.
Yeah. It sounds very like I know more than you, or yeah. I'm trying to like put you in your place.
Right.
It doesn't feel like it's coming from a place of respect. And right. For it to be something that you may bring up and he's like, oh, I'm just, you know, just asking. And I don't know what his insecurity is that's showing up, but there's something there that is sticking out to me that feels uncomfortable. I'm of the opinion that this is something just having a hard sit down with him and making sure that he understands that whenever he does this, it's very annoying and disrespectful. Mm-hmm. And you can set boundaries and stand firm on that. You know, make sure you're being super clear and firm what those boundaries are and what and communicate that to him so that he understands that I don't feel respected when you do this. And it feels either very childish or it comes off. And you could even say something like, yeah, this is very annoying and disrespectful when you do this. When you do this to me, what are you wanting from me? Is there some sort of regression happening when you do this?
Oh, yeah.
Throw the tables right back at him.
Totally.
Because then it's like the ball's in his court for him to like figure out like, well, what is the thing that he's all about? And I think that's a great point. What if he's, I don't know, he read one too many, I don't know, psychology articles and he thinks right. he's trying to get all, you know, woke about it. And I think,
right.
And that's great and all, but it sounds like it's not really a discussion. It sounds more like a one-way transaction where he just wants to feel, yeah, like it makes it superior or smarter or something. And that's not really a way to have a conversation or a relationship. If you want to share something, let it be a discussion. And if he's got his like snarky fucking comments, like, shut it down and or flip it, say the same back to thing. It's like, oh, are you asking me because you're regressing into some kind of childlike state, you know, and then see how he responds. And maybe flipping the script, I realize may not be super NVC, but flipping the script a little bit will kind of help him get a mirror to himself to see, oh, I don't really like this. And it kind of calls him out in a super subtle way. And then he gets to squirm and realize, okay, what I'm doing is kind of mean.
That's a great way to turn the mirror on somebody. I like that, Fernando, because he may not be seeing the impacts of what he's doing very clearly. If he's kind of getting off like his ego on the superiority moments where he's like, ah, I have her figured out. She has a complex or whatever.
I can't roll my eyes hard enough.
I know. We're going to fall out of our chairs here, man. And so you can let him know that, hey, I don't feel like you respect me when you say things like that. I feel like you are calling into question my own intelligence by implying through these comments that I don't know myself as well as you know me. And that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, it's great that other people can have an external perspective on us. That's very helpful. We are mirrors for each other in this life. That's great. Mm. But also for somebody to say like, I have you figured out. You have such and such disorder and like, you know, these things where like he's diagnosing you without asking you questions. So you in your conversation with him, let him know like, hey, if you're really, really sure that something's going on or you want to diagnose me as something, can you at least phrase it as a question? Like, try to get curious. Be like, hey, babe, have you ever considered that maybe the reason you like X is because of Y, Z, and whatever? That way you can confirm or deny his suspicions. And it sort of keeps him in check about just having like the omniscient, I know everything, I figured you out kind of attitude.
Yeah.
That way he can ask the question if he really wants to know, if he's really curious about you about this. Then you can be like, I wouldn't say that's really accurate. I like X because of A, B, and C.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then he can actually learn a real fact about you instead of making up his own.
Right? Yeah. Another thing you could say is like, well, whenever I pay you for your opinion or when you're licensed in this subject, then I'm happy to listen to your thing. But right now you're not any expert in this. So I paid my therapist for that, not you.
The burn. Oh,
yeah. I'm kind of coming cold on this one because I'm like, no, I don't think what he's doing is kosher on any level. And I certainly don't want to give him any idea that it's okay.
Yeah.
And I think there's different ways to go about it. Like we can, if we want to do that, he could say, hey, babe, I have this article I found and it was talking about this. And I'd like to discuss it because I'm curious, maybe ways I do this, maybe ways you do this. And like, let it be a curiosity exploration and curiosity.
Yeah.
And rather than like, oh, you're just, you like Disney movies because you're childish.
Right.
Which is not true. You know, like adults like Disney movies too.
Totally. And in this conversation where you set those boundaries, resolve in the future to call him out if he doesn't adhere to them. So if he starts doing that psychoanalyst shit again, call him out and try different ways because some might get through better than others. A little gentle like, hey, babe, you're doing that thing. Remember we had that conversation. Mm-hmm. Can you cut that out? Sometimes that's effective. Other people need a little more hard-handed thing like, hey, cut that shit out. We talked about this. I'm done listening to your fake psychology. Or a playful attitude, which can be really effective too. Let's say he starts doing it. She could say, you know, I don't remember having this appointment in my schedule. Let me check my schedule here. And then maybe he can laugh in his own self-awareness and be like, ah, damn it, I'm doing that thing again.
It's like I didn't realize we're in a therapy session. That's Thursday and not with you.
Totally. Right. I'm not on a couch right now reclining and telling you my woes. So we're not having this conversation, you know, or whatever.
Exactly. And you could also even just, when you bring it up with him, make sure that he's aware that what he's doing, you're just like, why are you asking me this? You could just even flip it on him like, I'm not sure what you're asking or why do you want to know this? What does that have to do with anything you're doing right now?
Ooh.
And that way it's, you're kind of like, I'm not even interested in answering your question because I want to know what's your bag? What is this really about?
Ooh, I like that so much,
because,
Fernando.
Thank you. Because this is like, I want to, because my curiosity is leading me to wonder what does he get off with this?
Mm-hmm.
And so by asking him, then we can get to, okay, maybe I'm regressing or, you know, I don't know. I'm putting a lot of faith in him
to have that credit.
Self-acknowledgement, but it does, then it can be more of a dialogue and it's no longer about him doing his thing. You're like, no, well, why? I'm not even going to answer your question until you tell me what is this really about? And then we get to the fucking root of it.
Ooh, so, I love that. Yeah. That sounds very effective. Well, I hope you try any and all of these things out and let us know how each of them go. Yes. We're very curious.
Yes. And let us know which ones worked really well.
Hell yeah.
Thanks, Deneen. All right. This last one comes from Xander, who's a 22-year-old male. And he writes, I feel like I'm cursed when it comes to dating. My last 6 or so boyfriends have only lasted 3 months, and I'm burnt out from dating. I want to date someone more than 3 months, but it seems like things just never get past that point. I'm not sure what I'm doing wrong or what I should be doing. What gives? Any ideas?
I'm sorry that's happening to you, Xander. First of all, it sounds unfulfilling based on what you're looking for. And we don't have enough information based on your short letter, what's exactly going on. But so I would have you ask yourself these questions. Mm. Notice any patterns in the guys that you date? Like, are there similar characteristics about these guys? Maybe you're a sucker for really flaky, low commitment dudes. I mean, that could be the case. Or do you notice any patterns in the reasons the relationships end? Like, have they all broken up with you for like a similar reason, or have you broken up with all of them for a similar reason or different reasons, but it's always you? Like, oh, you find one flaw and you throw them out the door, you know? So looking for any kind of information that you've gathered just in all the data points that you have could start to reveal some emergent properties either in your own personality or your tastes in others. Or the way that these relationships unfold, perhaps. Something's going on there.
Good observations. Mm. I like that. Yeah, there's definitely, I have more questions as well because we don't have enough information. I've definitely been in that place. And I think, and some of these, when I look through, I'm like, oh, that I wrote up, it felt like it resonated whenever I was going through that period of only dates. Have you had that experience? Like dates only lasting, you had a series of people you dated where it's like, they were just like short.
I guess so. Yeah, it's happened.
Yeah. One was like, do you know And this comes about knowing yourself. Do you know your own deal breakers? Mm. I think it is super important for us to know when we go on dating, it's surprisingly common that we don't know what we want. Mm. Guilty of that. I think I was on a thing of they're cute, they like me, and I like them, so hey, let's date. Right. And so like the bar is very low, and there's things I want and things I'm like, you know, I'll tolerate. And I think I met a friend recently, and they talked about how they're just so, you know, they aren't sure what they want, but they're kind of just going with each relationship, see where it goes. Mm. Also monogamous, and also not telling anyone that they're dating other like multiple people at the same time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I always ask, I'm like, oh, so none of them know about each other. Okay, just making sure.
Oh,
got it.
Right.
So knowing your deal breaker, what's a deal breaker first off? Deal breaker is a thing that you're like, that's a hard no for me. So if you do not want to date someone who smokes cigarettes regularly, that can be, for me, I don't like the smell of cigarettes personally. So it's a pretty hard no for me. Mm-hmm. That if someone's a regular smoker, it's like, I don't like the smell, and it's just.
It's like a non-negotiable.
Yeah, exactly. Non-negotiable. For some people, that means someone has a kid. I'm willing to date people who have kids. Some people are like, nope, if you have kids, mm-hmm. won't do it. Some people who want to have kids, you know, so you get the idea. It's something that you're just not willing to tolerate, or just like, that's, hey, all these other things are great, but that's kind of a hard no for mm-hmm. me.
One of our mantras here on the podcast, know thyself.
I just learned that.
Well, but you've been living it your whole life, certainly, based on my observations.
Also, like Meg said, do you have unrealistic expectations of the relationship? So that was adding to what you were saying, where is there something that this person, like a consistent thing there, or maybe there's a thing you don't like about them. Maybe there's, I don't know, their eyebrows are too thin. Maybe their eyebrows are too bushy, or something really subtle you're like, I can't handle, whatever. Mm-hmm. Is it just lust? Maybe you two met at a club or whatever, and maybe the attraction was mostly physical. Mm. Maybe that's how you two connected, was physically. And then after that, it's like, you know, I want something more, but all you know is physical intimacy.
Oh, yeah. It's like you started on a basis that wasn't inherently going to be long lasting, and you didn't assess them or filter out any of those non-negotiables right out of the bat. So maybe taking more time to get to know people if you're just jumping in mm-hmm. and not like really assessing the match percentage or match quality.
Yeah.
Which is hard to perceive at first, certainly. Dating is just a game of rolling the dice over and over again until you get as good a match as you can find, right?
Yeah.
So you do have to sort through a lot of people to find one who's really right for you and you for them. But I do want to point out that if you're 22, this is a common experience. People at that age, speaking from experience here, not throwing anyone under the bus, but they don't know themselves. They don't know what they're looking for. They're still figuring out who they are, what they want. And a lot of people are just trying to have fun. College is, you're just surrounded by hot people all the time. The options seem endless.
Like, age of like, yeah, that's definitely.
Yeah. So like, it's great that you're looking for something longer term. There were totally lots of people I knew in college who were in long-term relationships and really happy about it. But it was just a sea of people in very short-term things, like hookups and one-month things. And so be patient with yourself and with those around you. Everyone's still figuring their shit out. And it's okay that they're in that part of their journey in life. But you also don't have to just settle for that either and be like, well, I guess I can't have a long-term relationship till I'm fucking 30. Like, no, you can totally have one now. You just might have to tune your filter and calibrate it a little better for that. If that's what will make you happy, you know, you can find it in those around you. You just might have to look a little harder or be a little more specialized in the way that you sort through people.
I think that filter piece is such a great point. Because it's easy just to, if it feels like dates are scarce, or you meet someone, you're like, oh, well, I met them. I think there's like a fallacy. It's like there's a fallacy around like the amount of time you invest in something.
Oh,
I forget what it's called.
Sunk cost fallacy. Yes. Oh, shit.
And so I wonder if that's like, there's a relation to like, oh, I met this person. I'm already starting to talk to them. So I kind of want to see this through.
You're calling me out here for fuck.
I mean, I'm fucking guilty as too in this. So I'm just like talking about it. I'm like, ugh, yeah.
Yeah.
Been there.
It's real.
So welcome to the podcast where our hosts call ourselves out one question at a time.
Get out of my wine.
Another thing that's also worth asking yourself is that, is it becoming too repetitive or predictable? Because especially in the first few months, you're still getting to know each other. Are you doing the same kinds of dates? Are you just hanging out at home? Are you just only going out and you don't really get to have one-on-one time with each other? Or is it like the same, you know, every time you interact, it's, there's nothing changing. It's kind of like nothing feels like it's growing. Mm-hmm. Like it feels good, but stagnant. This is tolerable and this isn't bad, mm-hmm. but I want something more. That's also valid too. We also don't know if, you know, is your communication clear?
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, the one I wrote was, what was the first impression, the best impression?
Oh.
So the person come really like with all guns swinging the first time they met you. And then afterwards you're like, you know, they're not, maybe you got to see this kind of like a very, I don't know, expressive side of them.
Like their flawless version of themselves.
You know, like at a party, they're hopped and they're like, I can't say hopped up with drugs, but that's they're, you know, like they're just like on whatever. And they're like, oh my God, we have the best connection. But oh yeah, I was speeding that night or whatever it is. Then you get to, then when you see them and you're both sober, it could be a very different experience.
Yeah.
So it's good to know, to have that as a awareness, because maybe there's really awesome and both of you just kind of wanted to let loose that night, whether it was drinking or whatever drug of choice, if that's your thing or not. But either way, those are things to note too. Like you don't want to just feel like the first time you meet them, that it takes how they're going to be all the time.
Very true.
Like some, like, you know, we talked about it before, but like, yeah, meeting someone at festival, it can be a really wonderful experience, but that's one version of them. You're seeing them away from work, away from probably most of their stresses, you know.
Very sparkly.
Probably they're, literally sparkly.
Then, yeah, exactly. They're like down for some adventure and they're happy to like bop around and like, oh my God, everything's beautiful and incredible because we're at a festival, but that's like not real life, you know.
Yeah, try to make it real life.
We do try.
Oh, festivals, how I miss you.
We
right
miss
now.
Them so much. Help.
Yeah.
Well, Xander, we hope that in the inquiry of asking yourself all these questions, you learn some things, find some patterns, maybe ask a few trusted friends if they have any perspective on what's been going on with you and the patterns of the people you've been dating, if you've been confiding in friends. And we hope you find the right long-term person for you.
Good luck, Xander. All right, this brings us to our spotlight topic about how to break up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited and also just...
This is a big topic. We'll come to it in subtopics many times in the future, but we're going to do a little overview here.
Yeah. So why is it important to have a good breakup?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you even talking about this? Well, how many breakups have you had where it's ended with... ended in fights or lack of communication or just like ended really messy.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe caused issues with friends. If there was like, if you had mutual friends.
Fucking most of them.
Yeah. Everyone raise your hands. Cause if you haven't, I'm so impressed. I want you to write in about that shit.
Yes,
so.
Please.
So this prompt, I wanted to delve into this because I realized that that's a learned skill of how to break. And trust me when I say this is not easy.
Mm-hmm.
And even when you have all the tools, it doesn't mean it's always going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Because it also requires something from the other person, but you kind of have to show up as best as you can yourself. It doesn't say anything if it doesn't go well about you. Just, you know, breakups are hard. Breakups, you know, especially longer relationships or if they can feel unexpected, can also be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Other conditions with how it was done, where it was done can be a big factor. And so what we want to equip you today is how, you know, give you some ways to try to help your next breakup to be respectful,
mm-hmm.
calm and collected. And so that way it doesn't have to be this ordeal. You don't have to drag it through the mud for months or days or
mm-hmm.
whatever. And that it kind of leaves the door open for like at least a friendship or something very respectful.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you have to get together again, but I think generally we feel better when we don't leave a mess, you know, behind us.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we're also trying our best, and sometimes that just doesn't always play out the way we want it.
Right. We're inviting you all to change your belief structures around breakups and what they mean and why they happen and how they have to happen or don't have to happen. You can have a new perspective about this. You can look at breakups as a there's no right versus wrong. There's no good guy versus bad guy narrative here. I mean, unless, and the exception to this whole conversation we're having is when there's like serious betrayal or abuse or something very terrible happened where clearly one person was acting unethically. We're talking more about when the relationship ends for other reasons where there wasn't a very clear like bad actor, right?
Yeah.
And I think we all have these assumptions. I think my whole life I never even considered that one could do breakups with intention, that they could go smoother if you just tweak a few things and try to do things differently. Yeah. I just thought breakups were things that happened no matter who initiated them, and they suck, and people are going to say things they regret, and it hurts a lot, and you have this long recovery period, and it's rough. Like, I've had breakups where I thought my world was ending. I felt like I was dying, you know, or I'm wrecked for months, like laying on the couch, staring at the wall. Like, and that's rough. Even if you have a conscious breakup, you can still feel like shit for months. Like, that's all right. Own it. If that's what you're going through, that's valid. But the process can be done with a little more awareness, consciousness, intentionality. I found this phrase called conscious uncoupling. Ooh, I thought it was so cool.
So nice.
What? This is a revolutionary concept here. And it was coined in 2009 by the best-selling author and therapist named Catherine Woodward Thomas. And there's a book by the same name, which we'll go over in a future episode as a toolbox. Yeah. But kudos to her for that term, because I think that encompasses a lot of what we're trying to talk about here.
Yeah.
Because since when does a breakup get phrased as an uncoupling? First of all, that just already insinuates a really different attitude about it, right?
It does. Breakup feels very like, it's like breaking glass.
Yeah.
It's harsh. There's going to be pieces everywhere.
Yeah.
There's probably some sort of violent component to it in a sense.
It hurts.
Yeah, it hurts. Cut yourself, cut the other person.
Oh my God.
Yeah, messy.
Yeah.
Coupling sounds like we're just literally taking a chain link and just breaking it and like separating
it. Moving them apart. Yeah, that's great.
I like that.
So she defines conscious uncoupling roughly as a breakup characterized by intention, goodwill, generosity, and respect. It's one that minimizes the harm to each other and collateral damage to others involved, like kids. And it's a way to move forward with grace. Like, wow, it makes me sit here and look back on all my breakups and think, how different could each of those have been had we done that at least more consciously? Because sometimes they're not messy or there's no screaming, but someone just says, I don't ever want to see you again. And then they get on a plane and then they never see you again. Like, that hurts a lot and can wreck you. And that's certainly not a conscious uncoupling, but it doesn't have that rom-com stereotypical horrible breakup attributes to it either, does it?
Yeah. Right? So before we delve into this, I'm curious, because I'm sure some people may ask, how do we handle who keeps the friends? Not that anyone owes friends, but that's a,
Yeah. But they're involved. They could be collateral damage, especially if you're going to go talk shit to a friend and it's a mutual friend. They don't know whose side to take, or they're suddenly involved in some drama they don't want to be a part of. Right?
Yeah. I think with friends, in the interest of being mindful of how a breakup goes, friends should not be used as collateral. I think it gets super messy. Then you're dragging them into your shit that's not even theirs.
Oh my God, right?
This is between you and the other person. You can still have those friendships and they're valid, and as well as the other person as well.
Absolutely.
You may just have to navigate a little bit more mindfully, especially if you want space. And I think that's important just to remember that you don't own anyone's friends. Mm-hmm. If there's mutual friends, maybe you could also reach out to them and say, hey, like, this is happening. I'm interested in keeping our friendship, not interested in dragging my ex, my soon-to-be or now ex in the mud. And we actually would prefer not to talk to you about them. I'm working with that with my therapist or with other people, because this is that's too close to home. You know, it's like, don't shit in your own backyard.
Yeah.
And so that could be a way to go about managing the friendship and then keeping it respectful. So that way, and then if you have events where, you know, you have mutual friends and you're invited, you can always lightly ask, hey, I just want to know if so-and-so is going to be there. I'm not ready to interact with them right now. And that way, you know whether you'll go or not go. So there might be some navigating around those like social situations, but I think that kind of mindfulness goes a longer way than saying, well, fuck this person. Hey, like, I just want you, you know, like, I think they're kind of a piece of shit and they're, you're going through and just making them wrong in all the ways.
Yeah.
And then now they're getting involved in something that they're, that they aren't. And it's kind of, it's tainting their friendship when that has nothing to do with you. We can all, every person is so unique in how we're connected to other people. One person can say you're the most, they're like, oh, you're okay. They're okay. They're kind of boring. Another person can think you're the most fascinating individual they've ever met. And another person can think you're the nicest. And the other's like, oh, they're kind of a dick.
Yeah.
All those things can be true at the same time.
Oh, so true.
Because we don't, we meet people in, from different experiences. Like the person who works the counter, you know, like a waiter, waitress could be really nice to you. Then the next person who's kind of a dick, they meet them and they're kind of mean to them.
Mm-hmm.
Both experiences are valid. And so you have to remember that people are, so, we have such unique connections and we want to be able to honor those throughout whatever that looks like going forward. So just because you had a bad experience with them doesn't mean that person's bad.
Absolutely.
But we need to be mindful of how we're interacting with it and owning our projections, our perspective, and making sure that's like, you know, yeah, that's, it's valid if you had a bad experience, but dragging, making them just like the biggest asshole in the world doesn't exactly make you look better. You know, you're hurting and that's valid, but you don't need to hurt other people in the process.
Absolutely. People do regrettable things from a place of pain. When you're hurting, you have an urge to hurt others. It is so common. And it doesn't have to be that way. You can stop yourself from doing things you may regret. So a really core concept to breaking up with conscientiousness is don't do things you would regret later. Don't do things that you wouldn't want written up about you in a newspaper article about your life, you know, or that people you look up to would learn about you and go like, oh, wow, she did that during her breakup. You know, like try to keep your own record clean in the way that you're treating this person who you once loved, who you once wanted more than anyone else, right? How can you pay proper homage to the connection you had with this person? How can you hold that in high regard and respect and gratitude for the experiences you did have that were positive, but it's not working out anymore for whatever reason? And you have to face the reality of what the breakup entails and try to do it together. Try to make it collaborative. See what you can negotiate about what communication you each need, who's seeing which friends for at least a time being, perhaps, if you need certain types of privacy or boundaries set up in your life in order to move on. If you're like, oh, I need to block you on social media just for my own mental health, but like, please don't take it personally. We'll be friends again someday. Or I don't see us as friends again. I just need to make a very hard line between us, whatever it is. And so the uncoupling involves detaching from your partner and seeing yourself as a separate and independent entity. You're no longer identified in the partner role and you are unentangling your lives. Sometimes they unevenly affect the initiator and the respondent, you know, whoever initiates the breakup and then whoever is then responding. So it's kind of on the initiator ethically to let the respondent know as soon as they're pretty sure they want to break up. That way there's not this like drawing out over time, because that allows the initiator to mourn the relationship long before they even say this is over to their partner. And then the partner's like, whoa, this came from out of nowhere. Yeah. What? I didn't know you were feeling it. And then the initiator's like, I've been over it for months. Right? Because like they've already gone through this process on their own. So if they had respect for the respondent, they could say, hey, I'm starting to feel this way. We're moving toward a breakup. I don't know if we need to do it right now, but I just need you to have transparency around what I've been feeling. Mm-hmm. I think that's the more ethical way to go about it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. No blindsiding with a breakup.
Yeah, not cool.
Right.
I think there's also a couple other things I want to add, you know, to be mindful is to be respectful during the process.
Yeah.
So saying mean things to each other is not helpful.
Mm-mm.
Don't disrespect each other. No matter what shit you have with them, stick to talking about yourself. Oh, and so that's also another piece I wrote is like owning your shit.
Yes.
So taking ownership for your part, your needs, you know, like we mentioned earlier, I have a need for this relationship to, you know, I have a need around, I don't know, I have a need around like how sex, I like to have X amount of sex or whatever it is, or I am not as sexually active and I need someone who's going to meet me there.
Right.
Whatever the case is.
Instead of phrasing it like, you don't have enough sex for me, it's more like, here's what I want, rather than you are wrong for doing it.
Right.
Your way.
Yeah. And I think anytime that there's like disrespect or like cutting down the other person, you're not, if you're trying to save the relationship, cutting down the other person isn't helping your fucking case.
No.
You've pretty much just dug up the entire grave and you're like, here, just jump right in because we're right, and I'll put the dirt right back on you.
It's like burning the bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So being respectful, and if it's hard for you, just be mindful of your charges. And if you can meet in person, I think try to meet in person. Mm-hmm. But I also think you need, if that's safe to meet in person. Mm-hmm. If it's not safe for you or you are not able to because of how you interact with the person, maybe you find yourself leaning into their influence a bit more. Mm-hmm. So that's good to be aware about. Maybe you find yourself having a hard time with words in person for whatever reason, whether it's anxiety, maybe it's how you interact with that person. Maybe it's under high stress.
Yeah.
Number of reasons. I know that sometimes I struggle with like those conversations. And if I start feeling confused and like I lose my words, it's hard for me to have a good conversation. So I think that it's okay to break up in different forms. Mm-hmm. Figure out what way that you communicate the most effectively and the one that you're not influenced and you can speak the most clearly that is also respectful. And if that means that's over a message, an email, or anything else, there is nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. I think any judgment that's put on you is that's on the other person. Because you're trying to deliver the most clear message to be received. Because if you are trying to meet and you're like, okay, I'm going to talk to you about these things, and you go meet in person, and then the other person does all the talking, then you have no space to talk. Then you're like, and you have no words.
Right.
Or you get triggered, whatever the case is, then that conversation didn't go anywhere.
Right.
And so I've definitely been in that situation where like I had something trigger happen, lost all my words, and had to like, and it was just like, I was like drawing blanks. Like I couldn't even get anything out, even though I was very clear what that conversation was like before. So I realized I need space so I can like be super clear and then communicate it otherwise.
Sounds like a lot of flooding and overwhelm.
Yeah. And you don't know what's going to like trigger you and kick you on. Mm-hmm. Like once I started learning that that happens, like, okay, I need to, if I can't manage it in the moment, I've got to step away. Back because I want to be able to be absolutely clear and deliberate with my words. Mm-hmm. I don't want to come in and like just start spitting shit just to get words out
right.
Because it's going to be messy. So
yeah, we just don't want to advocate for people breaking up over text or over the phone in just out of laziness or out of a desire to just dodge any accountability or like, oh, I just don't want to be around you and you're like all sad and mad at me. So I'm just going to send you a quick text and then I don't have to deal with you anymore.
Yeah, if you're going to be like, yo, you know, it's over. Peace, dog. That's right. That's not, you have to have more.
Or if you're just doing it to harm them, you know.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of programming in our society around breakups. There's this narrative that if your relationship fails for any reason, if it ends for any reason other than one of you died before the other, then that relationship was a failure. And credit to Dan Savage for calling this out a lot. Ooh, and I think it was very wise. And it's just that relationships end for a variety of reasons. And you can be your own judge of which ones are worth ending a relationship over. It's very subjective, but that doesn't mean the relationship failed. Sometimes people are only there for a reason or a season, like they say, right?
Yes. Yes.
And so it may hurt a lot. You may be suffering. You're lonely. There's heartbreak. You might feel rejected or judged or unwanted anymore. And those are wounds you can heal on your own time during your recovery. Mm-hmm. But be careful not to judge the relationship as like it failed. Right? Yes. Like it served you both for certain reasons, for a certain time. Try to find those nuggets in the mud of gold of like things you can be grateful for. And you can reframe, relearn this conditioning as, well, maybe breakups aren't just the worst thing ever, a failure, a mark on my character, or a judgment about my lovability or my ability to commit or any of that shit. It can be seen as an opportunity for personal growth, for spiritual awakening, for you know, showing one last act of love to your partner by being kind and compassionate to them as you break up. You can see them as an arena in which you can practice your skills of communication. Like, yeah, I'm super upset and activated right now, but I really want to do this relationship service as I believe it deserves. I want my conscience to be clean about the way I behaved in this container. And so I want to treat my partner with respect. And sometimes maybe that's me coming across a little cold or clinical in the way that I speak. But hey, at least I'm not throwing dishes at the wall or calling names or using this opportunity to stab them in the back and get revenge for breaking my heart or any of that shit.
Yeah.
This ain't a rom-com, people.
Yeah, exactly. We don't need to make it this like this disaster piece here.
Right.
Something I've been doing with breakups, I guess over the last few years, is that whenever one ends sometime during the that process, I'll do a letter to them that they never get.
Ooh.
And the letter is like to acknowledge their relationship. I'd like to do it in person, but some of those, it's either they've set boundaries or I set boundaries. I'm like, I need space.
Yeah.
And I'm not willing to have that conversation in person, or they aren't, whatever the case is. Mm-hmm. And I'll write the letter to them. And it's writing, saying like, you know, acknowledging all the sweet times. Mm-hmm. Also pointing out the things that were like, this didn't work. And I realized what wasn't working.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, I get to say the things I needed to say and let it be like, but I know that I burned the letter at the end.
Nice.
I don't send it to them because this is me to have it complete for myself.
Yeah.
Because if we wait for the other person to like have resolution, we're going to be waiting a long fucking time.
Yep.
So
it's like you got to write your own epilogue.
Yeah.
That's great. Cause then you kind of take control of your own narrative of that experience in your life.
Yeah. And I feel like every relationship, you learn so much from it, mm-hmm. However short or long it is. And there are good things you can take from it, no matter how bad, in big air quotes, it could have turned out. Mm-hmm. Like there are things that you know didn't work. You learned this part about yourself that, okay, this is now a deal breaker for me or whatever. But then there are things you learned about yourself in the process. You learned about them and other people and you can be grateful for. And so it kind of gives me a place to see the bigger picture, because every relationship is going to have its ups and downs. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be all one or the other. Like there's going to be some nuggets that you can at least celebrate for. And then also the stuff that you can say, okay, this didn't work for me. And I didn't really appreciate that, or I didn't feel respected in this manner. Mm-hmm. And so it gives me a way to help move on without it being super bitter at the end. You know?
Yeah.
But
it's kind of like choosing your own emotional experience that's going to come out of that breakup, right?
Yeah.
You're not just at the whims of the way that the wind blows you with anger and regret and bitterness. It's like, well, I can feel my sad feels or anger or betrayal or whatever, but I can also treat it in this different way and choose like a path that helps me recover faster or smoother or helps me be a better person, et cetera. You can kind of drive the experience just a little bit.
Yeah. One more thing I want to add that I think is really useful when it comes to breakups is that distance and space.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, and if you're a little more enmeshed in some ways, if you use social media, unfollow that person, hide their notifications. I think we run into the issue when we keep having those people ping us in our life, mm-hmm. even indirectly.
Mm-hmm.
So we start seeing, oh, they're in our feed or they're in a group chat, so, you know, whatever the case is. If that means you need to either, like Meg said, like if you need to like block them temporarily or need to unfollow them from whatever or hide notifications from them, so that way you're not constantly getting reminded from them, that's going to give you enough space to like heal and to work through whatever you need to and on your piece of it. And that way at some point you can open up the conversation. But when you keep having, you know, constant interaction afterwards, it can be hard to like move on if you're not ready, or if you're like, I need a lot more space with that person. If they keep reaching out, then it's like, this isn't going to, they're not, and if you made a boundary, it's like, you want your process respected. And if they're not going to respect that, then it's like, you have to find a way to like set the bar down and say like, I need to do this for myself.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing vindictive, but I just need to be, I can't keep having this person in my life when I'm trying to like move on from it. Because it keeps like bringing up all the stuff.
So true. Well, I can't wait to dive into all the subtopics here, like how to communicate properly after a breakup, how to negotiate new boundaries with someone you're still going to be seeing all the time in your life, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to dive into this in future episodes. But We hope that you found something helpful here, if at the very least, just a paradigm shift. And we hope that your next breakup is somewhat better than the other breakups you've had.
Hopefully not anytime soon, but right. If you do, we're here for you. Yeah.
We love recommending books to you on this podcast, and we want to make it super easy for you to use these incredibly helpful resources in your own love life. That's why we've teamed up with Audible, which has thousands of titles of all genres, which you can listen to while driving, cleaning, cooking, or any other activity. We don't judge. If you sign up through our link, you can get one free audiobook and one free month trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/headoverfeels.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for tuning in.
To submit your question, go to our website, headoverfeelspod.com.
Also, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at headoverfeelspod.
Please subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, and review in your podcast app of choice.
See you next week.